Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
Welcome back to another episode of Cutting the Distance Podcast. I'm your host today, Dirk Durham, and I've got a really special friend with me today, Bradley Dammerman here. And Bradley messaged me on Instagram a few years ago and said, "Hey, would you like to go mountain lion hunting?" And I said, "Boy, would I." So we put together a plan and we come up here in the dead of winter and went cat hunting. And if you guys haven't watched it, it's on the Phelps YouTube channel. The thumbnail is a picture of me holding a big old mountain lion. We had a heck of a time with chasing cats with dogs. And I've always said, if you can spend 5 or 10 days in the mountains with somebody and still like them at the end of that 5 or 10 days, then that's a pretty special person. Immediately, I found that with Bradley. He was easy to be around. It's like we were old friends. He owns and operates a guiding business called Idaho Whitetail Guides, which is kind of a misnomer for the business because he runs a lot of mountain lion hunts, runs a lot of bear hunts, lots of elk hunts, and deer hunts too. And maybe deer hunting would be maybe not even your biggest draw, really. You probably, some of your other stuff is a bigger draw, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, for sure. I would say elk probably is my biggest one. It was I had purchased the business and the name was Idaho Whitetail Guides, and then I had a lot of things added, you know, elk and bear and everything added throughout the years, and I just didn't go through the name change. I just kept it the same, but it's worked out.
Yeah, you stay real busy every fall, but yeah. Anyway, thanks for coming on today. As I get to know Bradley a little bit more, I've known him, and I know a lot of same people, you know, through, you know, this, it's a small world. And it seems like every time we get to talking, we know all these different people. And one thing I've always heard about Bradley is what a elk hunting machine he is. And, unfortunately he don't get to hunt much for himself, but, he had an elk hunt here a couple of years ago, two falls ago. You finally were able to get out for yourself. You normally guiding clients, you had an opportunity to go with your father-in-law, and you guys went out and chase some big bulls around, and you got an Idaho giant.
Yes, that was well needed. I really enjoy watching, you know, whether it's a first timer, you know, kill his first elk, you know, it's really fun. But every once in a while, you know, I got to get out there and do a little hunting for myself, and that was a good opportunity to spend time with my father-in-law. And heck, we're still talking even, you know, after that long trip.
If you can spend some time in the mountains with somebody and still like them.
Yes, exactly. And we're still getting along, so that's good.
That's good.
No, that was a fun hunt and one I'll never forget for sure.
Yeah.
And luckily, I would have probably killed just about any bull. You know, I wasn't going to be picky. I didn't have a lot of time, but I was fortunate enough to get a really nice public ground bull. So
yeah.
and you guys kind of videoed that, and it's on Outdoor the Core YouTube channel.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep,
you can watch it there, and I used kind of a GoPro in my cell phone, so it ain't no Dirk Durham video or anything, but it's it still gets the point out there.
Yeah, no, it was that was good. I enjoyed watching it. Thanks. You know what a lot of people don't know about Bradley is, well, I'll tell you this right now. He's not ever going to brag about himself, so I'm going to brag about him a little bit. he's the real deal. He's grown up right here in the heart of elk, deer, bear, mountain lion country. Like, we're at his place right now, and it's absolutely beautiful here. And he grew up in the same house that he lives in. He went right out his back door as a kid, you know, with grandpa, with his dad, chasing hound dogs for bears and cats. And how old were you when you went out on your own and got your first bear with dogs?
I'll start with the lion hunt just because I can remember that one. The best. I was about 10 or 11, and my dad was working, and we got 2 inches of fresh snow, and I begged my mom, you know, my poor mom, you know. I had this old yellow Yamaha three-wheeler that got gave to me, you know, and I actually built a platform on the back of it to haul 2 dogs, believe it or not, a three-wheeler. That sounds safe, huh?
Yeah. That's, you know, that's,
definitely no helmets or anything like that.
Oh, yeah,
but, anyways, I begged mom, you know, to take the dogs out. So I actually didn't load them up. Then I just jumped on the four-wheeler and I drove up the canyon here, up the drainage here by my house, and found a lion track, and I knew it was fresh because the snow, you know, it snowed in the middle of the night. And so I come back and I got these 2 plot dogs that I had out here that, you know, were basically my dad's, but I kind of claimed them as mine, you know, but my dad trained them and stuff. Bear and Jack were the 2 dogs I grabbed. And I went out there, I drove out there. And this three wheeler I got's a real peach, you know. I mean, I had this, the throttle on it, you know, it broke, so I just had the wire tied to a piece of stick, you know, and I was kind of pulling that stick and driving. I had the 2 plot dogs on the back.
Oh my
and
God.
Anyways, and I know my mom was just worried to death about me, you know. It's cold and everything else, but anyways, I got out there and put them on the track, and they went right out of hearing, you know, barking. And I was a little nervous, you know. Back then we didn't have near the logging roads and stuff like we do now, you know. So I started going on foot, you know, behind the dog tracks. I couldn't hear them anymore. And anyways, walked quite a ways, and there was my first, you know, I'd been to lion trees with my dad and grandpa, like you said, but there I had my first lion treed by myself with my 2 dogs, my dad's dogs, whatever you want to say. I had it treed there, and I'll never forget that, because it was a real special moment for me as a hound guy, you know. And I thought to my first thoughts was, nobody's going to believe me, you know. Yeah. So I went back and got my mom, and she bundled up. I just left the dogs, you know. We didn't have wolves to worry about back then either. Right. You know, there wasn't wolves around here. So I just left the dogs treeing on the cat. Come back and drove all the way back here and got my mom and loaded her up, and I'm like, mom, you got to walk in. Nobody's going to believe me. I got one treed. And I hauled my poor mom all the way in there, so I had proof that I actually caught one. So
that's awesome. That's a good mom.
Yeah. And where I grew up, you know, my dad, he was pretty, he's a lot, I'm nervous wreck, you know, with my kids out there on four wheelers and pickups and everything. But I actually was driving a pickup and up the canyon here way earlier than I should have, before I had the driver's license.
Oh, yeah.
So I had the hounds out and hunted a lot at a really young age. You know, I hunted with my dad and grandpa, but if they weren't going, my dad was fine with me loading them up and going. And hounds are definitely a big passion of mine. I mean, I'm glad to have them, and it's a lot of fun, and it's necessary. It's a good way to, you know, manage the predators too. And I'm not a big killer. I let a lot of stuff go, you know, but I do manage them, you know. It's a good managing tool. And, hounds are important.
Yeah. How many days a year do you hunt your dogs?
Oh man. I, at least 150, probably pushing, 180, closer to 200 days.
Depending on the year.
Depending on the year. But, mm-hmm. you know, I hunt, you know, I'll start hunting here at the end of the November here, and I'll be hunting clear till March. You know, I'll mm-hmm. go to a show or two. But other than that, I'll be hunting every day pretty much. And then, you know, I do every once in a while in the fall season, even last fall, I bear hunted. We have a good fall September season here, but that's always been a tough one for me because you got bugling bulls or listening to the hounds. But I try to do both, you know, I'll hunt a week or so sometimes if I'm lucky in September, mm-hmm. you know, if the bugling's slow or something and one of my clients want to go on a bear hunt or something, I'll do that. And then, in the spring and summer, you know, I'm hunting from around April 15th or May 1st, somewhere right in there, you know, depending on what units open. I'm clear till the end of July.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, I don't miss too many days yeah. in between. So,
yeah.
Well, they rack up pretty fast.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And your dogs show it. I mean, they get hunted a lot. They're in good shape. Mm-hmm. They know what to do. I had the pleasure of going cat hunting with you, and then Phelps came out and we went bear hunting that time. And I really wanted Jason to get to shoot the bear, and the bear kept running over into an area that he couldn't hunt because he was a non-resident, but I could mm-hmm. since I was a resident because of licensing and stuff, hound hunting licensing. But anyway, that was funny because, you know, yeah, Jason, and I'm like, I hope you get the bear, but in the end, I got the bear.
Yep. So, you got the red star.
Yeah, that was pretty fun.
That was fun. I enjoyed meeting Jason and hunting with him as well. And
yep.
You guys are a lot of fun to be around, just at camp even.
Yep, yep. We even videoed that one. So if you guys check out the Phelps YouTube channel, that one's on there too. But the real reason I brought Bradley on today is I wanted to kind of go over some common mistakes made by elk hunters every year. He has a lot of folks he brings hunting every year. He sees a lot of people come through the door. He's been guiding a lot of years. And, you know, some of the things that people could do to help their success maybe before they get here and while they're here on hunting, whether you're on a guided hunt or a DIY, I mean, this is all applicable stuff. Mm-hmm. So I kind of I thought, you know, I always have my ideas of mistakes people make, but that's usually, I'm like looking inward at my own mistakes. Mm-hmm. So as someone that's taken lots of people hunting every year, you probably see a few things that like people that may not think about before they ever come hunting. And it'd be really good for our listeners to hear those problems and mistakes and maybe find a way to avoid those before they come hunting.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. That's important stuff. And I think the most common, probably the number one thing that seems obvious on an elk hunt, you know, and this definitely depends on the hunt you're going on, but we're talking elk here, is being in shape, you know, I take a lot of, and I'm careful when I say that because I do take a lot of older people mm-hmm. and stuff. And, so you don't have to be a elk shaped guy, you know, I mean, 100%, you
right.
know, but any kind of exercise that you can do, you know, talk to your outfitter that you choose, you know, kind of figure out, you know, what kind of walk and how many miles a day and try to, every day, just walk it at home, you know, for a couple months before your hunt. Any little bit helps up your odds and helps us as a guide, you know, because we can only go where you can go. And so that's probably the number one thing that I see is just people, man, I should have exercised more. I should have been a little more prepared physically for this hunt. I see that a lot. So
yeah.
That would be number one.
Yeah. I talked about this before on another podcast earlier this year about getting ready for elk season and stuff. And, you know, no matter what your physical condition is when you start getting in shape, like, you know, you can do it. Like maybe doing exercise for you is walking around the block at home once a day because you have a sedentary job, or maybe you just you don't get out much, and you know, you got to start somewhere, right? If you can walk around the block every day for a month and then make it 2 blocks, 3 months, you know, you just build upon that. By the time it's time to go elk hunting, you're going to feel better than just going from a sedentary, you know, maybe a desk job or something, to immediately jumping into the mountains, you know, maybe hiking roads and trails and off road or off trail and through some steep stuff. You know, and I always said too, put a backpack on, cause you're probably going to, you know, be wearing a backpack with you, you know, and man, your old shoulders and your back, if you're not used to carrying a backpack around, your shoulders and back kind of can get sore after day one. And it, by the time the end of the hunt comes around, you're about into shape carrying a backpack, seems like. For me, it is, at least. But if I can, start carrying a backpack a month before season, as I'm walking and doing my other exercise, you know, put a little bit of weight into it. And if you're doing this for a 2 month spread, by the time elk season comes, maybe have 40 pounds in your pack. And that way, when you get out here in the mountains, whether you're on a guided hunt or a DIY, you know, your back and your shoulders feel pretty good. You're not going to be like, I'm sore every morning when I get up and I put my pack on and it's difficult. And now your mind's off task. Your mind's thinking about your aching back or your legs that are sore instead of thinking about elk hunting.
Yes, you nailed it there. So
yeah,
definitely use it as an incentive to get in shape. You know, I'm going on this hunting trip, man.
Yeah. You don't have to be an elite athlete, which is awesome if you can get that way.
Yes.
But you know, get in better shape than you were before, and you know, it'll help.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just any little bit helps, like I said, any little bit. So very important that you take that serious. But I would say something that seems obvious, but I bump into it a lot, is people show up here with their brand new boots still in the box.
Yeah.
I've ran out of Band-Aids putting it on blisters.
Guys,
break your boots in. And I know this is, most people probably do know this, but I see it a lot. Again, on depending on the hunt you're on. If you're going on a whitetail hunt somewhere and you're going to be sitting in a blind or a stand, you know, well, you're probably not doing a lot of walking, so you know, you could probably bring your boots brand new then. But put those boots on, break them in however you'd want to wear them a lot, you know, before you come on the hunt. Very important.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want to go, you know, hunt the first day and then be kind of lamed up and sore and just kind of miserable the rest of the trip, you know. And a lot of the places you might be going with an outfitter, you know, there might not be a store real handy to go get a different pair or try a different pair or whatever, so make sure they're gonna work for your feet. And that's it's just amazing how much I see that, you know.
And try to incorporate that in your exercise routine. So
yep,
you know, 2 months before the hunt, you know, just start breaking those boots in, you know, wear them every day on your hike.
Yep.
Wear them around town, wear them shopping, wear them to work, whatever. Wear them doing chores in the yard, maybe mowing your lawn or whatever. But, if a blister, it's so funny to me, like a blister, it's such a little thing. It's a little part of your body, but it can just wreck your day. It can wreck your hunt by having that painful blister back there. It's like, it'll stop you. If they get really bad, they'll stop you in your tracks. And you may have to take a couple of days off to try to heal up before you can walk anymore.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I've seen people just not go out.
Yeah.
You know,
it's crippling.
They've paid for a hunt and they're just like, I'm going to hold back. My feet are sore. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of miserable, you know, and I'll usually adjust for that, you know, as a guide, you know, we've got lots of places to hunt, so we're okay. Well, he's pretty lamed up. We need to take him over here, maybe set him. You know, we'll work around it, obviously. Yeah. But, you know, it's just kind of a bummer.
Game.
It's going to put a damper on your hunt.
Yeah. Yeah. And bring in another thing about that point. Bring some, I mean, Bradley said he ran out of some Band-Aids, but bring some of your own stuff too. Keep them in your pack. I like Leuco tape. You can get it on Amazon. Leuco tape, it's like a medical tape. And this stuff, once you get it stuck on, it almost won't come off. You have to like take it off, get it like soak in the bathtub and, to get this stuff to come off. And it's great for blisters. It's not bulky. It's real thin. It almost looks like the tape that's on a rubber or not rubber band that's on a Band-Aid, but it's like super sticky, super tough. And let's say you get a blister on day one, you start getting a hot spot. You put that over the hot spot and the blister and get it stuck on there. And that thing may be on your foot at the end of the week. Like it will stay on there really good. So yeah. Highly recommend that stuff.
Yeah. I'll have to get some of that and stick in these cabins.
Yeah. Your hunters will be happy for it.
Yeah.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go, but here's one product that stood the test of time: Seafoam Motor Treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps engines run better and last longer. It's really simple. When you pour it in your gas tank, Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. I'm talking common stuff like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy. Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it clean your fuel system. You probably know someone who has used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again. People everywhere rely on Seafoam to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way that they should the entire season. Help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
Okay, something else I see a lot, and it's not too big of an issue, but it's something to think about, in my opinion. Choosing your hunting partner, now I'm talking about a guided hunt here, you know. So we sell one-on-one hunts or two-on-one hunts,
right.
Which a two-on-one is two hunters and one guide, if you're not sure what that means. But what I see a lot as a guide is I'll get two buddies that'll show up on a two-on-one hunt. One of them's in shape and one of them's not. And so kind of, you know, maybe if you can, you know, pair up with somebody that's similar condition that you're in, if that makes sense. Because, you know, it's a two-on-one hunt, so I'm hunting you both. A lot of times we're walking together in the morning. You know, in the evenings and stuff, I'll set you in different spots. But elk hunting, you know, we're hiking, you know, in the timber and walking a long ways, you know. You know, one guy's like, I can't go anymore, you know. And the other guy's like, he's not even breaking a sweat, you know. So I've ran into that issue a lot, and I do understand, like, on the flip side of that is, you know, I get a lot of father son things, you know, just right. You know, where, and a lot of times on those the dad will just go without me, take him, get him an elk, you know.
Right.
But it's something to think about, you know, or at least be aware of it, you know, that
sure.
Your partner could slow you down on right. A guided two-on-one hunt.
I see, like, another thing with hunting partners is before your hunt, and I think people kind of don't do this a lot because I talk to a lot of folks, is they don't have a real good conversation with their partners. Let's get deep. Mm-hmm. Let's have a deep conversation with your hunting partner and find out what their expectations of the hunt are and what are yours. Because sometimes we kind of assume what the expectations of the hunt is, and then when you get there, opinions or expectations collide, and one person's like, yeah, dude, I just want to go hunt the mornings and come back and eat lunch and then go hunt the evenings. And one guy's like, I want to hunt all day. And if you have two different mindsets like that, that can be a clash and that can be a big deal. And you might end up hating your buddy over mm-hmm. the deal. I mean, so you have to iron out any of those little bumps before you ever go hunting.
Yes.
So, you know, maybe the kind of style you use, you know, maybe your friend, he's more spot and stock, you know, a minimalist when calling. Maybe you're very heavy on calling. You want to use your calls a lot. Those two people don't usually blend well when you hunt together. Because one person's like, geez, I wish that guy would just quit calling. Shut up. Quit calling so much. The other guy's like, man, why don't he blow his call some? Mm-hmm. We need to get these elk going. So those two different mindsets just really clash. So if you can iron out all your expectations and your thoughts of the hunt and stuff before you go, you can really kind of figure that out. And then you can explain to each other and like work that out before you ever get there. And then when you get there, you know what to expect. And then you can make it easy for each other to have a good time.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Those are good points for sure. Yeah. I've definitely, I've actually seen hunting partners show up, you know, laughing, having a good time, you know, the first couple of days, and then literally at the end of the week, drive back to Pennsylvania with a complete stranger that was here this week that was close to him.
Yeah.
That their hunting partners were so mad at each other by the end of the week that they didn't even ride home back home together.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that's pretty extreme, but it is kind of what you're saying, you know, they just clashed too much, you know, mm-hmm. One guy wanted to hunt this way, the other guy wanted to hunt this way, and by the end of the week, they were just not real happy with each other. So, yes, very important to think that through, you know.
Yeah.
Or at least be aware of it and talk about it.
Sure.
Stuff. So.
And it may not be a complete deal killer. Let's say you guys are doing a DIY hunt, and it turns out you want way different things out of the hunt, but that doesn't mean you can't go and camp together and enjoy each other's time. Mm-hmm. In the evenings or whatever, camp together and then say, okay, bud, you go this way, I'll go that way, and I'll see you tonight. And if I get one, or you help me pack it out, and if you get one, I'll help you pack it out. You know, there's ways to still, you know, it's not a completely deal killer. You don't have to hunt maybe with each other side to side all the whole time, but, you know, there's solutions to, like, if you enjoy your friend, or maybe it's a relative, mm-hmm. And you want to make it work, there's ways of making it work and still go, but not clash as much.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely, you can definitely work it around, especially on a do-it-yourself, you know, a two-on-one guided hunt, you know, you're kind of stuck, but I even can work around it some,
yeah.
You know, as in like set somebody somewhere and then, you know, hunt with the other guy, you know, on foot. Sure. And then alternate the next day. I've done that. So there's always ways around stuff, but it's stuff to think about for sure. Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah.
Another thing, if we want to move on, optics and shooting distance. That's when I first started outfitting or guiding hunts, you know, the scenery around here's changed, you know, there's more logging and stuff. You know, growing up, I hunted the timber a lot, you know, and, you got a 100-yard shot in the timber was rare, you know, just really didn't happen around here. So I didn't really shoot that, you know, that far away. You know, I'd sight my gun in for 100 yards and go, you know. What I see a lot on a guided hunt is you know, they're not from around here a lot of times. They might be from back east or wherever they're from. And how hard it is for some of these guys to see stuff. I'll see elk, you know, and and I can't get them to see them sometimes, you know, and I'm like, you know, trying to explain as fast as I can, you know, you see that busted off snob over there on the ridge, and they're like right below it, a little bit to the right, and they just can't see it. And so what I've learned is a lot of times, you know, they'll buy an expensive hunt, you know, to go on and be dedicated in a plane ticket or whatever, or travel all the way out here. But they'll have a 40-year-old pair of binoculars with them, you know?
Yeah.
So I think optics are really important, especially, and back to what I meant by timber, you know, things change around here. We can see so much, you know, here in northern Idaho, or at least where I hunt, you can see so much further now, you know.
All the logging and stuff.
Logging and stuff. You can glass 1,000 yards or 2,000 yards now. So you don't want to have your chance on a guided hunt and the elk walk into the timber, and I've had it happen several times and never even laid eyes on it. And it's even, when you're a guide, that's a horrible feeling, because you think you're looking, they're like, well, I never seen it, you know, they're looking at you, and I'm like, I swear there was a nice 5-point there, I promise. And they're kind of looking at you funny, and you're like, okay, we're walking over there, I'm showing you tracks where it walked into the timber.
Right, know? Right.
But so I think, and I'm not saying you have to go spend a bunch of money on like, don't break yourself, you know. If it's in your budget, though, you know, buy a decent pair, you know, 10x42s even, you know, something better than grandpa's old pair of binoculars anyways, you know.
Yeah, you don't want grandpa's World War II binoculars.
That's right.
You know, and I can say, you know, there's some pretty decent binoculars for $200-$300. I mean, they're not the best, but they're better than 20 years ago.
Yes.
$200 or $300 binoculars. They've come a long ways. Yep. And, you know, buy the best optics that you can afford.
There you go.
For your budget. And another thing, this is off topic a little bit, but relative to binoculars, there's nothing worse than being hunting and you look up on the hill and you see another hunter and they're eyeballing you with their rifle scope.
Yeah.
They're pointing their gun at you and they're looking at you with their scope because they don't have binoculars. Right. And that's a pretty unnerving feeling. And I feel pretty strongly about that. That's kind of BS. Like, but binoculars, I think everybody can afford a pair good enough that you can tell, look, you can scope out, like, look through your binos at a guy or an elk or a deer or something. There's no excuse to be throwing your rifle up and eyeballing people with your scope. So
no, absolutely not. Yeah. I've had that happen a lot to me too.
Yeah.
Yes. Have a pair of binoculars. Don't use your scope. Nobody wants a gun pointed at them. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Distance. I think knowing your gun and knowing your bullets is extremely important. I see this a lot where either they brought old grandpa's gun, you know, with a not a very good scope, you know, and they can only shoot 100 yards, you know. And I'm not saying I'm a big long distance shooter, and I know some people are into that, some ain't, but at least try to be able to shoot 300 yards, in my opinion. I mean, that's going to up your chances so much, where I hunt anyways. Well, and another thing, I see a lot of people will show up here with the most expensive scope you could think of, Night Force, whatever it might be, you know, expensive, fancy scopes, a fancy gun, and me and the guys are like, I want that guy, you know. Well, come to find out, he's only good to about 250 yards, he'll tell you.
Right.
And
right.
I kind of shake my head at that. Well, why do you got all this expensive gear, you know? But right. I think practice in, like, if you're from back east or somewhere, you know, I know it's hard to find a place to shoot. I know a lot of my guys have told me, well, we don't really have a spot to shoot 300, you know. And so that could be a challenge, but practice further than you think you're going to shoot, you know. Practice shooting a ways, I think, will up your elk hunt a lot here where I'm hunting. Because anymore, you know, we can take a 400 or 500 yard shot easy anymore, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you can't shoot that far, your opportunity might walk into the brush, and that might have been your only opportunity for that week. So
right.
practice, you know. Shoot. Even if you're not, you know, when you're practicing, you know, who cares if you miss, you know, I mean, just shoot as far as you possibly want, you know, further than what you think you're going to shoot on the hunt anyways.
Right.
And then that helps.
And I think if you can't get those long ranges, if you can't get like that 300-yard shot at your local range, or, you know, maybe broaden your views a little bit, you know, search surrounding counties that, like, well, there's that one shooting range over here that they've got a really nice one. You know, they hauled some competitions at them or whatever. Maybe you can reach out to 1,000. But yeah, maybe before your hunt, go over there. Just, you may have to drive for an hour to get to a place to where you can shoot at distance. Or if that's just like, I've looked, I can't find nothing. I would recommend, maybe you can shoot 200 yards, 100 yards. Instead of shooting a large target, make your target very small. Make the aiming point very small on your target. So instead of having a 2 feet by 2 feet big piece of paper to shoot at, maybe now we're shooting at a playing card, you know, and now you're trying to shoot the diamond on the playing card. That's your aiming point, right? And you're not just going to sit on the bench at the range and just shoot that, like, because typically when you're hunting, that's not a shooting from a shooting bench is 100% never going to happen when you're on an elk hunt or any kind of a hunt, unless you're shooting out of your backyard, right?
Right.
So shoot in awkward positions, you know.
Yeah.
Stand up, lay on the ground, take a knee. You know, find yourself getting comfortable shooting those shots, getting that muscle memory down. I'm not a big bipod guy, but what I do instead of a bipod is I use my hunting pack. I've got a pretty decent sized hunting pack, and I get good at like pulling my pack off, throwing it on the ground, getting my gun on it, laying down, finding the target, and then executing the shot. So those little things will help you immensely, like getting on target. It's really hard to like sometimes find the animal in the scope, especially if it's moving or something. And like you alluded to, it's like the hunter's like, I can't see it. I can't see it. Right. You know, I've seen this with my wife and kids before. You get them on something, they're like, I can't see it in the scope. I can't see it in the scope. It's really tough. So just this weekend, I had my friend Lee out, and he's new to deer hunting. And we did some drills with, instead of using the rifle that he's going to hunt with, we used a .22, which is a full-size .22 rifle with a full-size scope on it. Mm-hmm. And by, you know, putting it up quickly, finding the target quickly in the scope and shooting, and then just doing that from different positions, standing up, laying down, kneeling, all these different, finding, maybe we did this with Lee, there was a tree close by. Okay, let's pretend that's the deer over there. You need to get to that tree quickly and quietly, and then find the target, lean against the tree, rest your rifle on it, take the shot. And that made that helped him a lot. He's like, wow, I'm starting to get it. You know, I'm starting to feel good about this. Then they have confidence in finding the animal in the scope and then making that shot.
Yes. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, because big issue, you know, with people just, you know, a lot of my hunters will have the scope, you know, zoomed way in, you know, and you know, too, and you realize, shoot, they've got their scope turned all the way up, high power, you know, have that, you know, turned down, and then you got a little wider view to look and find it in your scope. But yeah, just finding it in the scope is major. Yeah. I mean, and that's so easy to practice. Like Dirk said, you know, there's lots of things. I got, you know, we got ground squirrels around here. So my kids, you know, and Amy and stuff, you know, that's, you know, if you got an opportunity to hunt squirrels, even, you know, it's just good practice to getting your gun pulled up and getting on stuff, you know, because most of the time, as you know, they're not standing there forever, you know, so you've got to be quick, and that could definitely cost you an elk.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
So I was not telling your outfitter if you have any health issues. It's something I've learned on the fly.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's something you might not think of, you know, it's something I didn't think about when I first started, and I'll tell you what happened to me right out of the gate, you know, when I owned the business. You know, I've guided, you know, since 99, something like that. So, but I've owned the business 13, 14 years or whatever. But, the first year or two anyways, I had a whitetail hunter out here, and I set them, you know, I was setting them in pop-up blinds and tree stands and stuff. I could tell right away this guy was extremely impatient, which I don't judge because I'm not the most patient guy setting in a stand either.
Yeah.
But he was getting a little frustrated setting in the stand, not really seeing much. And this guy is probably, I would say, around 50, early 50s, something like that. But anyways, I told him, I said, well, why don't we, you know, go for a walk and do a little spot and stalk, and I'll bring my rattling horns and grunt tube, and we'll see if we can maybe rattle one in or just catch one out there, you know. He was losing patience. So anyways, I drove out somewhere, and we started hiking, you know, and setting up and rattling and grunt calling and not having any luck. So we just kept getting a little further away, you know, and I just kept, you know, hunting. I didn't have no reason to be back right away. And we were walking through the timber there, and he tapped me on the back of the shoulder, and he says, Brad, and I could just see, I just looked at this guy's face, and I mean, he does not look right. He looks sick. And he says, I need you to go back to the pickup and get my backpack. I'm diabetic, and I'm about to have a blackout.
Oh, my God.
Well, I'm, you know, I don't even really know what that means at this point. And he's like, I need you to hurry. I said, the pickup's like 2.5 miles away. He says, Brad, I need you to get my backpack immediately. And I ran. I about killed myself getting back to the truck.
Yeah.
And getting this guy's backpack for him and getting it back out. Luckily for this guy, I got his backpack out, and I can't remember, he had some medicine or a candy bar or something, whatever, to help his diabetic. But he told me, you know, I've been a diabetic for like 35 years, and he said that was the closest I ever was to blacking out. I don't understand the diabetic real well, but what he told me was a blackout is you pass out and you never wake up.
Oh, wow.
If you're diabetic. So I was like, extremely close call. Like, it was an eye opener for me. Another story is, anybody that's hunted in September, at least around where I'm at, northern Idaho, the bees can be mean.
Oh yeah.
I've had guys out there that were allergic to bees and get stung and never had their, this, like I said, this is early on in my guiding career, you know, this stuff I've learned. They never had their insulin shot or whatever.
EpiPen,
sorry, yep. Yeah. And with them, mm-hmm. You know, well, that's a big problem. You know, we're out here a ways, you know. We're not getting back to the truck anytime soon, even if we're running, you know. And I've had some close calls like that where people, it was pretty scary. So very important. And I mean, if you're not comfortable, you know, a lot of times we'll, you know, there'll be 5 or 6 clients in a week and we're kind of all talking at night. And if you're not comfortable blurting that out, your health issues in front of everybody at camp when, you know, you're there the first night, just pull your outfitter aside and tell them, hey, you know, just so you know, I've got a bad heart or, you know, I'm allergic to this, and make sure, you know, that guy, you know, I don't think, back to the deer hunt, I don't think he realized we were going to walk that far, and right. I never really told him. So that was maybe kind of my fault. And he knew better. He told me he should have had that stuff with him.
Right.
But in his mind, we were just going to walk out there 100 yards and,
sure.
and come back to the truck. So, you know, you can't leave it all on your outfitter. If you know you need that, EpiPen or whatever it might be, make sure you have it with you, and your guide or your outfitter is aware of it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, I would never think of that, but I don't have any life-threatening issues right now. Right. But I could see where that'd be really a big problem.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is for sure. We take that pretty serious, and I go over all that, you know, with everybody the night they go up, just because, like I said, I've learned this through the years of guiding, but definitely let your outfitter know, or if you're doing it yourself, you know, make sure you have all the stuff you might need.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go, but here's one product that stood the test of time. Seafoam Motor Treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps engines run better and last longer. It's really simple. When you pour it in your gas tank, Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. I'm talking common stuff like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy. Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it clean your fuel system. You probably know someone who has used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again. People everywhere rely on Seafoam to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way that they should the entire season. Help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.
You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
Another thing I see now this is I wouldn't say that it's every hunt. Well, obviously it's not every hunt, but if I see it more on my mountain lion hunts, or even like an archery elk hunt that I'm going to the backcountry and hunting pretty hard, and maybe even possibly staying a night out there too, you mm-hmm. know. If you've dreamed of going on an elk hunt for 10 years or whatever, and it's been something your bucket list deal, don't wait too long on pulling the trigger on that. I've guided, I don't know how many older guys that they did their best, and God bless them, you know, they finally got to a point in their life where they could afford it, I guess, you know, and show up and go on a hunt. But I don't know how many times I've heard these words. I should have done this 20 years ago. Yeah. Man, I'm mad at myself.
Yeah.
Why didn't I do this 20 years ago? So if it's something we only live once, right, you know, and if it's something you got, and I know for like me and my business, I can't speak for other outfitters, but like my wife, if it's, you know, this might be a do-it-yourself and you just figure it out, but like if you're going with an outfitter, I know like Amy's set up, especially with some of the younger people, you know, that have kids and a family, and we know how expensive it is to live nowadays, but she'll set up payment deals for them. It might be a 2-year deal,
right,
where they're making payments to pay for the hunt, but slowly, but figure out something. If it's on your mind, don't wait too long, because time flies, man, and we're not going to have our youth forever.
Yeah.
For sure.
We're not getting any younger every year, so.
No.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think if you book with an outfitter, you know, and you think you got a good outfit that you're going with, and something bugged you, you know, you're there for a week, something bugged you, something made you mad. Either the guide, you know, maybe he wasn't working hard enough, or the outfitter said something to make you mad, or the conditions of where you were sleeping, whatever it might be, weren't that great. You know, and this is easy for me to say because I'm the outfitter, but I think I highly suggest you just go to the outfitter and with your issue.
Immediately.
And sit down, and I know for me and my business, and I still do this, I'll have a group of guys in for the week and hunt them, and I'll ask them at the end of the week, you know, is there anything that I could have done different, or maybe, you know, put in the cabins or had, you know, different meals, or is there anything you can think of I could have did different? I'd love to hear it, you know? Mm-hmm. And we appreciate that, you know? So you might have an issue that made you mad, but I think going to the outfitter and talking to them, they're more likely, I know I am, I'm going to try to make it right. You know, this is our reputation on the line. I want to make it right, and whatever that might take, I know I'll work with you if you come to me. I don't really like the guy that you know, goes and just complains to other people.
Right.
Oh,
right.
This was horrible, and mm-hmm. this was this, and that might be. I mean, I've heard horror stories, but I think if you have an issue, it's important to let your guide know, because then they can work on it and maybe make a better hunt for the next guy's coming.
Sure. Yeah. Like, for instance, let's say the hot water tank wasn't working. Mm-hmm. You just don't know. You don't stay in the cabin. You got to let them know. You don't want to sit there all week with cold showers and
right.
and then be mad that you had cold showers. They'd be like, oh, the dang hot water tank wasn't working, or the mattress was lumpy, or something. You know, if there's something bugging you, like, gee whiz, they don't have decaf coffee, or
right.
Some little things go a long way with people. You know, they, mm-hmm. they're not happy with it. And if you mentioned it early and say, hey, you think we could get some decaf, or do you think we could get a different mattress? I can't sleep a wink. Right. I'm sure you'd jump through the hoop to, oh, shoot, didn't know. Let's fix that thing up and get you going.
Right.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You want people to be comfortable.
Yeah. You know, we want you to be comfortable and want you to have a good time. So, yes, please let them know, you know.
Yeah.
Because if they don't know, they don't know.
Or if it's your hunting partner. Let's say you're doing a DIY and your hunting partner's doing something that's really grating on you. Mm-hmm. Don't yeah. stew on it all week. Just say, hey, man, can we have a talk? Just say, hey, you're picking your nose all the time is really bugging me. Whatever it is.
Right.
Whatever it is.
Making too much noise.
Yeah, you're making too much noise. You pick up your feet, you know. And if you do it in a diplomatic way, instead of acting like a hothead or something, usually the other person's like, oh, wow, they didn't know.
Right.
And be happy to, you know, work on it. And that way everybody's happy. And sometimes, you know, the person maybe that's complaining should then say, was there anything I'm doing that's bugging you? And they may say, well, now that you bring it up, you snore like a freaking grizzly bear. Okay, I'm sorry. I'll try to work on that.
Yeah, I remember sleeping in a wall tent with you one time. Oh, yeah. It was kind of loud.
Yeah. Dang it. I'm sorry about that.
I've held a grudge ever since. You know?
I'm surprised you'll talk to me.
No, but those are definitely good things to go over. You know, I mean, you book a hunt with somebody. These are things that you don't really think about until you're there, you know. So,
yeah,
they're small things, but they add up, don't they?
Mm-hmm. They sure do.
For sure. Okay, another thing I see hunters making a mistake, which might sound kind of weird. Mm-hmm. And this all depends on the hunt you're going on, obviously, is I see hunters with too much gear, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's just completely like, what the heck we got going here? I don't have room in my pickup for this stuff. You
know? right.
Which, you know, most outfitters, I think almost probably all of them, and I know I do, is we have a gear list. You know, we have a gear list. This is what you have to have. So if you book with an outfitter, make sure you get a gear list. And, you know, and then I might recommend some stuff that you can bring or you don't have to, you know, but, you know, just the basics. But and a lot of it depends, you know, where you're going, obviously, you know, if you're walking or camping or hiking in. But my style of hunt, you know, where I hunt, you know, a lot of times we hunt for 2-3 hours in the morning and then stuff kind of dies down and we kind of take a break. So what I see a lot is these hunters, they show up with a 50-pound backpack loaded. I'm thinking, man, if we have to put a quarter on that thing, it's really going to be heavy. But
yeah,
they've got more gear in there than they'll ever use. And then by the end of the week, we're hunting and they're all that stuff staying in the pickup and they realize they didn't even need it.
Yep.
They brought it and it just sat in the cabin or whatever. And, they've lightened up a lot.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's another thing that's going to wear you down is just having too much stuff on you. And nowadays, you know, it's kind of normal, you know, even me, it's like, I remember when I used to, you know, grab a pocket knife, 2 extra bullets and a gun and go, you know,
right.
pretty much. And And now it's rangefinders and radios and cell phones and all the stuff, you know, it just adds up.
Yep.
But, have the right gear, but don't have too much of it for the hunt you're going on. You just spend a lot of time researching and asking a lot of questions and figuring out what you're going to need. Do I really need this? Probably not. I'm going to leave it, you know.
Yeah.
But I see that a lot where guys are just way overpacked.
Mm, yeah. You know? That's a good point.
Yeah. Oh, shooting sticks. So this is something I just thought I'd bring up. So there's three or four guides, four or five guides, whatever I have here for the week. Honestly, I like shooting sticks. I think they're important because I see a lot of misses as a guide, shoot and miss. But I definitely have better luck with shooting sticks. But having the right shooting sticks are important too. You know, if you're going to be setting somewhere in a pop-up blind or whatever, you know, you might, you know, choose your shooting stick a little different. I like ones that are adjustable quick, you know, pull the trigger and adjust it for the spot and stock, you know.
Like those trigger stick ones?
Trigger sticks, yeah.
Yeah.
I like those the best for the style of elk hunt I do with the rifle.
Sure.
But then I have a couple guides that, you know, they'll look at my clients and say, break those things in half and throw them over the bank, you know, because it's actually cost them, you know, they're fiddling around with their shooting stick, you know, and cost them elk. But I'm a firm believer in shooting sticks, but they need to be quick, you know, on the style elk hunt I do. Like a lot of times I'll pack the trigger sticks for the hunter.
Oh,
and it works out good because I'll use it to rest my binoculars on or something when I'm kind of spotting stuff. And then if I see something, I can throw it out in front of the client real quick and get their gun on it. But shooting sticks and the right ones are important for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I always kind of go back and forth. Like, should I get some? Cause my buddy Lee this week, he's new at deer hunting. And I'm like, should I get some of them shooting sticks for him? And should I not? And like you say, they're kind of a pain in the butt to carry. And I'm thinking I'm going to get some. I'm going to get some.
Yeah.
And
I think they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I might even like them for me.
Right. And again, it goes back to having too much gear. How much stuff do you want to be fiddling around with too? But
like a one-man band.
Yeah. I know I like, especially for some of my heavier guns, I like to rest them if I can. Sure. You know? And, you know, there's different kinds you can go with and practice with them.
Yeah.
You know, I get guys here that we go out the first day of their hunt and we see something and they can't even figure out how to unfold their shooting sticks or whatever they got.
So, right. Right.
And so kind of something else you could maybe kind of practice with is getting those up quick and it's all time, right? I mean, sometimes you just don't have a lot of it on the hunt. And so you don't want it to like one of my guides, Travis, always says, it's cost me more elk than messing around with their shooting stick, you know?
Yeah.
But anyways, something to think about.
If people are looking to book with an outfitter, I thought I should ask you. So what kind of questions should you ask an outfitter before you put your money down? So I feel like there's probably some questions you need to ask. You maybe need to do some checking. What do you recommend? Like when you're vetting an outfitter.
Yes, that's very important. Ask a lot of questions, first of all. And don't be scared to, if say you're at a trading show or something and you've walked around and kind of looked at, don't be scared to ask questions. Don't be nervous. Just start somewhere.
Yeah.
Walk up to an outfitter and start somewhere. Just ask them questions. We're not going to judge anybody, or at least I know I'm not, on any questions they ask. Mm-hmm. Just get the conversation rolling. Mm-hmm. It'll go into place. But it might not be the first question I ask if I go up to somebody's, an outfitter's booth or something. But one thing that you're gonna want, and I think is important, is references.
Yeah.
And fairly recent references. Don't have references. Yeah, I hunted with them 10 years ago, you know.
Right.
You know, in the last year or two, get some references. And I know that when I'm at a show, I actually have a list of references. And on my references, I actually have people, obviously people are kind of, of course you're not going to put some guy that had a bad hunt on there. And that is true.
I mean,
you know, to an extent. But why I think it's important to ask them is, well, on my back to mine is, I have people that killed stuff, and I actually have people that didn't kill stuff.
Right.
With me, I think that's important.
Sure.
You know, if your outfitter doesn't supply the guy you're looking to go with, if he doesn't supply like references that didn't kill, maybe ask him. You know, like, hey, can I have a couple guys' phone numbers that, you know, weren't successful with you?
Yeah.
You know, and one thing I've learned in this business, in any business, I think you could probably agree, Dirk, is you're not going to make everybody happy.
Right.
So one or two guys that complain about an outfitter, I wouldn't think too much in it, you know.
Right.
Because I think any outfitter that's been in business for a while is going to probably have a couple guys that can find something to complain about.
Right.
That's just how it is.
Yeah, but it's really hard to make everyone happy out there.
It is.
It's as hard as you try. You know, it's sometimes it's like maybe it's a personality thing. Maybe they expected way too much out of an outfitted hunt. It's hard to say.
Right. Yep. So definitely check with that. And if he doesn't have any references, I'd be a little leery.
Yeah.
You know, maybe go on. Like I said, when I'm at a trade show, I have them there, and I might not hand them out to everybody, but if I'm talking to them and I think they're pretty interested in book a hunt with me, I'll say, why don't you take some references? And yes, and they might be some guys that have hunted with me, and I know they're going to talk highly of me, but it might not even just be about me or my, well, it would be too, but it might be something that I forget to tell you. Like you could ask them, you know, well, how was the cabins you stayed in? Mm-hmm. How was the food?
Right.
You know, there's lots of questions that you could ask somebody on a reference and kind of, you know, did they run you into the ground? I mean, did you how far did you walk? You know, there's a lot of things they can ask them. So, so important. References are important. And, I know not every outfitter hands those out because, I've been at shows where I've handed them out and I've had them come back and say, by the way, you're the only outfitter that handed me references.
Really?
I'm like, oh.
It feel okay, like well, that'd be kind of standard, really.
I would think, but I've had them do that. But wow. And I'm sure most outfitters do, or at least have them if the client asks. And they might not hand them out unless you ask, too.
Right.
Because, you know, I don't want 50, 60 people calling a guy, so
right.
It could be
for
that.
For serious inquiries.
Yes, exactly.
Sure.
Definitely, ask again, lots of questions. How physical is the hunt? I'm going to be, you know, what kind of terrain, altitude, you know, what am I looking at? Because I get a lot of guys here that, you know, maybe miscommunication and stuff on their end, our mind even, you know, I'm learning, I'm only human, but, I just didn't think it was going to be this hard.
Right.
You know, or I thought it'd be a little more of a challenge, you know, mm-hmm. really get detailed on
right.
on that for sure.
And maybe you should tell the outfitter, explain your expectations. Here's what a dream elk hunt sound would be to me. Mm-hmm. You know,
yes.
I wake up every morning about 9 a.m. to a 5-star breakfast. I sip coffee for a while as I look at the lake and enjoy a beautiful view. And then about 10, we get in the vehicle and drive around and look for animals and maybe take a shot or two. And then we get back early and I take a soak in the hot tub. And yeah, you know,
yes.
Is it that, I mean, I'm being silly here, but you have to like find out, like tell the outfitter what your expectations are. And he might just say, well, that's not really the kind of hunt we do.
Yep.
This is more what we do. And, you know, kind of like, I feel like that whole expectations versus reality thing is what really throws people off sometimes. So if you don't tell them your expectations, you may just go there thinking it's something it ain't.
Right.
If you haven't asked the questions and like if you just assume all these things, then.
Yep. That happens a lot, you know, and I've told people, you know, several times, you know, that were detailed about that I'm not sure I'm the guy you're looking for.
Right.
I'll recommend a few guys to you
yeah.
that I think you'd have a little more of experience with what you want, you know. Sure. So yes, and so important to know what you're getting into and if you're gonna like it or not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is I hear, you know, I hear all the a lot of these guys that hunt with me have been hunting other with other outfitters and different places and stuff. And one I hear that hunters complaining about not necessarily my setup. I feel like I have a decent setup for sleeping, but it, make sure you ask in the outfitter, you know, where am I sleeping at? You know, like,
oh,
you know, am I now I know I wouldn't, you know, might not bother some people, but I wouldn't want to show up, on a guided hunt and be stuck with five guys sleeping in the same tent or, you know, that I don't know.
Right.
And that might not, you know, I would if I'd at least want to know about it, you know,
right.
Like,
right.
Who am I going to get stuck with? Am I going to be sleeping with the cook somewhere, you know, whatever it might be, you know, have that all ironed out, you know, so there's no, when you get there, it's all about hunting. There's no surprises, you know.
In a bunkhouse with eight beds and seven guys snoring like
yep.
bulldogs.
Right. Yep.
So I'll need earplugs.
Yeah.
Or maybe I don't want to do that.
Right. Who knows? I've heard horror stories of mice crawling on people and these old shacks have been in and spiders and all kinds of, who knows, you know, just be aware of where you're going to be. And, I think we might have touched on this a little bit, but you know, ask your outfitter how far you're going to be shooting. Very important, and like we talked earlier, practice to what they say. You know, if like I usually tell my hunters, I kind of expect or would like you to be able to shoot 300 yards.
Yeah.
So practice to 400.
Yeah.
You know.
That way, 300 is a chip shot.
That's right. So definitely ask them that, and then you'll have a little bit of an idea.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of already talked about this, but what style of hunt, and is it gonna fit you? You know, like you were just kind of
sure.
brought up. You know, definitely make sure you're gonna, if you pull the trigger on a hunt, that you're gonna be happy with it.
You know what you're getting into. Yep.
And I think if I'm walking around at a trade show or something and trying to pick out an outfitter. And I find one and I'm asking him a lot of questions, you know, but I think I'm really going to be trying to look at this guy and see, is hunting really this, is it his passion or is this just a way to make a living, you mm-hmm. know, and you can tell by talking to somebody, you know.
Oh yeah. Real
you
quick.
Know, bring up some hunts. Like, what kind of hunts do you like to go on, what's your favorite hunt, you know, and see if you see that spark in their eye. And mm-hmm. I just feel like them guys are really gonna try harder, know hunting better. They're just gonna be a better choice for you if you can tell. Mm-hmm. Because unfortunately in this business there's what I call businessmen, you know, and I guess I'm one too, but you know, they're pushing numbers and they might not even hunt themselves really. You
right. know, they just have a crew of guys.
They might not guide even, yeah. you know? So definitely try to, see what you think there. Another good one is, finding out how many people are going to be in camp.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I know for me, I run a pretty small business, but I know if I go somewhere, I don't necessarily want to show up and there'd be 20, 30 people in camp for the week.
Right.
You know, that's a big red flag to me of somebody just either, and I get, you know, we have to, as outfitters, we've got leases and there's a lot that goes into it. So we have to book a certain amount of hunters to make it, or we're allocated tags or whatever. But, you don't want to go to somewhere where they're just flat being greedy and they're pumping as many, you're just a number.
Right.
We're pumping as many hunters a week as we can get to go, you know, keep that in mind, you know?
Right.
And I'm not saying that you're necessarily going to have a bad hunt. I would just keep that in mind.
Right.
You know, when you're looking.
Yeah. Cause some places, you know, they might have a gigantic vast area of, you know, that they lease or they're hunting on. It's just like, mm-hmm. you're never going to see be close to any of, but any of the other hunters all for a week. You know, you'll see them at breakfast and dinner, mm-hmm. but that would be it.
Right.
But other places, maybe you might be like, oh, they're glassing across the hillside. Oh, there's old Joe from the breakfast table this morning looking at me. You know, if it was a place that had a lot of hunters in camp, it probably better have a very vast area to take their clients into and not be stumbling over each other.
Yes, right. Exactly. And when you're walking around in the show, same thing. Make sure you're talking to the owner operator, you know, I mean, and again, I'm not saying that you shouldn't go through a booking agency, but at least to be aware of that, like ask those questions. Like, are you the owner? Are you the operator? Are you going to be there? Are you going to be guiding? Because I've known lots of my hunters say, you know, they booked a hunt with a guy and he wasn't even there when they showed up.
Oh, shoot.
You know, and kind of caught him off surprise, you know. Mm-hmm. And at least if you do go through a booking agent, you know, like I said, I don't personally use them because I run a small business and I want to be more personal.
Sure.
I want to talk to the people that are going to come with me and stuff. But if you do go through a booking agent, at least, you know, ask that booking agency, how can I contact the owner, you know, and get a little more detailed and personal with them.
Sure.
You know, and know, you know, like, okay, are you going to be there? Do you guide? You know, if they're not guiding and not involved, you know, it'd probably be a little bit of a red flag for me.
You know, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Sure.
And then another question you'd ask them is, how much ground do you got to hunt?
Yeah.
If there's five guys in camp and you only got 800 acres to hunt, well, that you might want to stay clear of that.
yeah.
You know, and outfitters, I know like how my business works is I've got my own outfitting area and I do all public ground hunts, you know, but I'm the only outfitter in that area and I have tons of ground and, you know, we're not going to run out of spots. You know, I'm confident of that. You know, I've got like 600 square miles, you know, but not every outfitter, some outfitters might have more or less, you know? So I think that's an important question to ask, you know, like how much ground do we have to hunt? Yep. And if you don't have much ground to hunt, you know, I'm not saying you wouldn't be successful, but it's something to, it would probably raise a little bit of a red flag to me.
Yeah.
I like breathing room.
Right.
You know,
right.
If I can't find something on this mountain, I want to go to another one.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
How long has our guides been working for them? You know, that's an important one to ask, I think, to an extent. So a lot of my guides have been, I've been lucky. I've had some guides that have worked for me from day one. I mean, they're excellent hunters and I'm grateful for that. But I think it's important to ask. I've been back east at shows and I've had outfitters literally hiring guides from back east to come work for them in Idaho. And I'm thinking, holy cow, that there's no way I'd run my business like that.
Right.
So you want to know who you're getting for a guide, you know, and those are important. And just because they're a brand, you know, a guide's got to start somewhere. I just trained one up 3 years ago. Super good young kid, does a great job. And the technology we got, just because it's his first year, you know, I kind of explained to him and I put waypoints and stuff on his Onyx or base map or whatever he has. And you know, tell him, you know, guide him through, like, this is how you need to hunt the hunters, you know. So he'll be just as, we all kind of hunt the same style, so he'll be just as successful usually, you know. But it's important to know who you're going to have for a guide and how experienced they are, for sure. Definitely a question I'd be asking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's super important because, you know, and it might tell you something a little bit about the outfit. If they have a revolving door of guides coming and going,
mm-hmm.
maybe there's something else going on too.
Right.
But if they've got, you know, guides that have been with them for a really long time, that means, you know, things are getting done right around there. And it's been a good experience probably for the hunters and the guides to keep coming back every year and a good outfit to work for.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it, you know, if you do find out you're getting a newer guide, you know, it's his first or second year of guiding, you know, try to dig into how long has he been a hunter?
Yeah.
You know, how long has he lived here in Idaho or wherever you're hunting, you know, some other things to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. He could be a country first year guide, but country boy that's been hunting his whole life. And, you know, he knows these mountains like on the back of his hand.
All right. So, yeah.
Or maybe not.
Yeah, exactly. maybe not. Yeah. It's important to get a good guide. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on. That was really great. All those points you brought up on the biggest mistakes and the how to best vet an outfitter, whether you're vetting an outfitter or maybe you're vetting a hunting partner. Those are some really good things to think about and conversations to have. That way you have a really good experience. Do you have any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I think I'd leave it as no matter if you're doing a do-it-yourself or a guided hunt, go in with a positive attitude. You know, go in, you know, you might not kill one. That's just reality. But go in there. I'm going to have a good time no matter what happens. You know, I'm going to be positive. I'm going to set a positive tone for the whole camp.
Yeah.
I love those kind of guys. They're mm-hmm. just, they're positive from the day they walk in till the day they walk out. And if they don't kill one, they're still positive. We love those type of guys. Just, it just really sets the tone for the whole camp for the week. And I love it.
Yeah, it sure does. You know, and an attitude is so contagious, whether it's positive mm-hmm. or negative. If you're exuding positivity and having a good time and people around you are going to have that same vibe, they're all going to start having that same, maybe they're like on the fence whether they want to be positive or not.
Right.
It's easy for them to follow suit, like, oh yeah, that guy, he's kind of uplifting and cheering me up, now I'm positive too. But if you're kind of being a poo-poo, you know, if you're having a bad attitude, then that's also really contagious, and it's actually really a lot easier to have a bad attitude than it is a good attitude.
Yep.
And my buddy Dan Staten from Elkshape, he always says, there's only two things on elk hunting that you can control, and that's your attitude and your effort. Mm. And that's so true.
That is true. I love that. Yep. Yep. And like you said, the negative attitudes are just as contagious. But I tell all my guides, no matter what happens, stay positive, and it really helps when the hunter, the actual hunter, is doing it. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Keep that number one, absolutely, positive attitude.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, guided hunts. I mean, they're just because you're going on a guided hunt doesn't mean it's any less of a hunt than a do-it-yourselfer. I feel like there's this attitude out there in the hunting world right now that, oh, it's a guided hunt. Oh, you drew a tag. It wasn't an over-the-counter do-it-yourself hunt. You know, some people kind of turn their nose up at that, and that's, you know what? That's not right.
Nope.
You know, the outfitted hunts, it's still a hunt. You have to show up. You have to work hard. You have to, you know, you have a guide there helping you, you know. So we're all in this together.
Yep.
We shouldn't be trying to tear each other down. You know, as long as the method someone else chooses to hunt is legal, mm-hmm. and you know they're observing ethical standards, you know, we should support them. You know, we shouldn't run them down.
Yep. Don't divide.
Don't divide. Sure. We're all in this together. There's too many people trying to take away our hunting rights and mm-hmm. trying to tear down hunting as it is. We don't need to do it as hunters.
Right. Yes, and thank you for bringing that up about a guided hunt. I appreciate that because, yes, as a guide, you know, I'm still hunting with hunters, you know, mm-hmm. that come with me.
Oh, yeah.
They're good hunters. They hunt at home. Mm-hmm. They're just not real familiar. And you can learn a lot. I mean, they can learn a lot. If mm-hmm. I take these kids up north here that, you know, are really wanting to get into calling and do it themselves, and they actually booked a couple hunts with me. And it's worked out real good. They've learned a lot, and they're out there calling in elk now by themselves and stuff. I mean, you're there with a good guide for a week, and you're paying attention. You can learn a ton.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you have a seasoned guide that's been doing this a long mm-hmm. time. You can learn a lot, and maybe that's your goal is to someday do it yourself. type hunt, or maybe not. Right. Or maybe you can go with an outfitter and they can provide a hunt that you would never be able to do on your own. You know, maybe they own, you know, a pack of hound dogs mm-hmm. that are really well trained and they know the area very well. For me, I can't own a pack of hound dogs and train them. I've just I don't have the ability, nor do I have the space to do it. And then where to do it, you know, I can come with Bradley. We can go chase cats, or we can go chase bears, and it's going to be an experience of a lifetime. Absolutely. So, you know, maybe it's just checking off a bucket list thing, mm-hmm. or maybe you've just never gone hunting before and you're intimidated. Just like, you know, I don't know if I can do this by myself, and mm-hmm. I want to go with a guide and learn everything he knows about elk hunting or deer hunting, whatever mm-hmm. kind of hunt it is. And then next year I'll feel comfortable to do it myself. And yep. that's a great way. There's no shame in that game. That's a great way to do it. Absolutely. It's smart, actually. So,
yep. Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I'd thank you for bringing the hounds up, you know, just before we go here. You know, if you have a chance I feel like hounds are kind of misled a little bit in a way, you know. I know not everybody, but, you know, I just encourage anybody to go with try to find somebody with hounds if they're willing to take you and go out there and experience that. You yeah. know, there's a lot of hard work that goes into that. It's not just turning the dogs loose or pulling the trigger. As you know, Dirk. Or, you know, like Dirk said, you know, you might not have the knowledge or the space or, you know, the time to raise a pack of dogs, but at least experience, you know, especially before you judge it, you know, definitely try it out. I think just about anybody I ever took out for the first time with hounds, I pretty much hooked them. So, it's fun.
Yeah. Well, on social media, anytime, like on the Phelps page or mm-hmm. even on my page or on our YouTube videos where we've gone hunting with you and it's like mm-hmm. hound dog hunting for mountain lions or bears, immediately there'll be somebody naysayer, be like, no thanks.
Yep.
Oh, that's the lazy man's way or whatever. And they'll say that about bear baiting too.
Yep.
And it blows my mind because to me, hunting with hound dogs or baiting, that is like the opposite of the lazy man's way. That takes so much time, discipline, effort. Mm-hmm. That I don't have time to deal to have dogs and train them and all that. Like, and then it's not like I just show up and just shoot something. Like,
no,
we hunted all week, you know, and you got to be in the cold, you got to be in the hot, you got to hike up in there to the tree. I mean, there's more to it than that. It's, and that baiting too. my buddy Cody Wilson went bear hunting last spring with him in Wyoming and in baiting, and people will poo-poo on that. They'll say, oh, that's the lazy man's way. If you've never baited bears,
right,
especially legally, where you have to do it per the law, you can't have it next to a stream, you can't have it next to the road, you have to do it right. That is an astronomical amount of work.
Oh, man.
Packing in bait and
yes, it is. Definitely.
It's crazy to me that people can sit there and run it down. They obviously have never done it.
Right.
They just see the fruits of people's success mm-hmm. and maybe feel a little jealous or think, oh, man, that must be nice or whatever. That's easy. Right. It ain't easy.
Yep. Definitely try it before you judge it.
Yep.
And it's definitely, I can promise you, not easy. I've got my whole life dedicated to hounds and I know exactly what it takes. And if, you know, the people that think it's easy, you know, go out and train a pack of dogs and catch your first cat and then we'll talk, right?
Yeah. They might have a little different opinion. Right. Yeah. So. Well, man, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on here and sharing all your knowledge and stuff with me. But I've been trying to get Bradley to go elk hunting with me, and we've been kind of talking about that. And he said, you just wanted me to call in an elk for you, which that's true. But I want to really call one in for him really bad, too. So I know one of these days we're going to probably put that together and hopefully we'll get to film it and share it with you guys. I think it'll be probably a hunt of a lifetime, really.
Oh man, I definitely want to do that, and I'll look forward to that. And yeah, I'd love for the bugler to call me in a big six.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
even a big spike. You know? I'm not too picky. well, I don't want you to have too much pressure.
Yeah. Oh, perfect, perfect. We'll keep our expectations right.
Yeah, we'll talk it over again. Yeah.
Well, thanks again. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dirk. I appreciate this.
Yep. Tell us where people can find you. Okay. Social and stuff.
Yeah, so I do have an Instagram page. You know, I started Instagram right about the time, 6-7 months before you come, about COVID year.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not the greatest on it, you know, but yeah. I'm on there. You can look me up. We have a website, idahowhitetailguides.com, and there's a lot of information on there and, you know, a way to contact us. And like I said, if you have any questions, I'm happy. You know, a lot of times my wife will take the calls and I might be out in the field hunting or something, but I will eventually get back to you. And even the do-it-yourselfers, like I said, if there's anything I could do to point you in the right direction or any kind of information you might think you need from me, don't hesitate to call.
Okay. Yeah. You know. Great. And on Instagram, your handle's Idaho Whitetail Guides, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you, Dirk.
Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.